Now, our speaker today is Gilbert Jordan, and he'll be being introduced by his friend Richard Dahl, who
to me was a young African American man, about 17 or 18, and I commented on his nice haircut that he had just gotten at Gil's. And he said, "Yes, Uncle Gil is a wise man." And I thought, for a teenager to be so sincerely respectful of someone, I realized Gil is a blessing for many people in our community. So I'm very pleased, Gil, for you to come and be with us today.
I don't know. I've had time with, they've definitely made sure I had enough time to prepare myself for this. And I've been doing a lot of speeches around lately and stuff, and I just had the hardest time with doing this because I was like, well, you know, they gave me some topics and they said on racism and business, but I could write that book, and I think that book would be longer than one of James Patterson books. So I kind of went from one direction to the other, and I think I will start with the just me with the barbershop and kind of relate from that situation. And I always start, I love poetry and quotes and stuff, and I have found this one, and it has said, "Our greatest glory is not in the never falling, but in the rising every time we fail." So let me start off with this. My name is Gilbert Jordan, and I own Uncle Gil's Barbershop. And if God willing, we'll finally get my restaurant called Concoctions fully open soon. Due to COVID and them two both in jeopardy, I took the major financial loss paying bills and couldn't open up. But thankfully, the barbershop has kept me afloat because I pay everything with no help but hard work, which I don't consider it work because I love what I do. I've been a barber for 34 years. I attended the first barber school in the world in Chicago and received my license at 17. Growing up in Chicago was hard. I had to live three lives, one as a son, then in the streets, and then try to go to school like a normal kid was tough. So being a barber, which I learned from watching my brother cut around the neighborhood, I gave it a try on myself till I got better. Then my mom let me cut my little brother's hair. Then from there, I went to their friends, to the neighborhood, and then the neighborhood barbershops heard of me, and I was in there. So working in the barbershop really not only gave me the confidence, but also the knowledge working under older, experienced barbers, that it is bigger than just a haircut, but a place also people can go to vent, relax, or just be around others, and get a chance to be around others you probably would have never thought, or a safe place to resolve issues as well. Being a barber was my backup plan. I also played professional basketball and also was a welder, in which my granddad taught me when I was 11 years old. So after basketball and the obstacles life took me through, I also cut hair. But back then it wasn't making the money. I needed to accomplish my goals of raising a family, so jumped into welding and made pretty good money. But doing industrial work, I lost my spacing. and dealing with people in the surroundings made me feel like I just worked to make others rich and make their dreams come true. So as time went by, I still was cutting hair and was the first black barber in Rochester, Minnesota. So was cutting hair part-time, and one day was approached to run a barbershop. And I didn't hesitate at the opportunity, and also brought my wife along because she was also a well-known hairdresser. And we did good, and my wife did well enough to open her own shop and start her own product line. We had worked on for years, and now we are in over 100 Hy-Vee stores. In the process of me running the barbershop in Rochester, I had traveled from surrounding cities and states and had a man who worked at Winona State University and a woman who was a dean at Luther College in Iowa. And they would tell me how hard it was to find good barbers, or it wasn't any. And the light bulb came on in my head. And I asked if they could get me into their schools to cut hair. And they did. I would cut the students' hair in the locker room at Winona State. And at Luther College built me a barbershop in the school. And I still go there 4 years later. And the news also did a story on me, and it went viral. And after I was going to over 9 universities, but also was still cutting in Rochester, and after a few times going to Winona State, they stopped my contract. But had so many people driving to Rochester for me, I decided to look into finding a place in Winona. And just starting all over, I did with Uncle Gil's barbershop. I didn't want to do a grand opening or anything because I feel people would be my advertisement and with their heads. And it should spread like the food also, and they did. So now I only go to 2 universities, Luther College and Upper Iowa University, and I also go to middle school in Rochester, and I work Tuesday through Saturday here at Uncle Gil's Barbershop, and I work on Sundays also in Rochester, because I still have a lot of doctors and people that had been dealing with me, because I've been living there for 26 years. So as you can see, I love what I do and now have a big vision. But with no barber schools in these parts of Minnesota, the closest is St. Paul or Minneapolis, Wisconsin, they have to go to Milwaukee in order to go to barber school. There isn't many licensed barbers to get their work with me, so I have decided now to go back to barber school to get my instructor's license so I can open a school to make more opportunity for others, and so I don't have to work as hard myself. and I passed on what I was taught by my brothers, and then I can pass on what I was taught by my brothers and make the test, and I take the test next month, and really giving it my all, because it will also open doors for me, because it's a hard road dealing with how people feel about people from Chicago, African-American, and a felon with a 620 credit score. No family members willing, or I have to help. No one that has help but the man upstairs to keep my hopes, goals, and dreams alive. I will make a way to open my barber school by next year. This time, not only bring in more jobs, but also give cheap haircuts by students to underprivileged and the community in which I decide or can open it at. So then I ended it with a quote, but in my journey, just being myself, it's been a hard road, you know. Not only from racism from other colors, but my own color. You know, I think that's the hardest racism. I think we're more harder on each other than we are as other colors and races are dealing with. And you know, my mom, I'm gonna tell a story, which I think I've shared it. My brother was shot in the house on 2 different occasions. One of the times I was actually sitting in the living room on the floor. I was putting a basketball rim together and with my other little brother, and my big brother was sitting at the dining room table. And some guys had came to the dining room window and shot him with a 12 gauge. And You know, I've actually seen, you know, everything happen. And the funny thing was, it was over a girl that I was dealing with, and I was only like, I think 12. But she was dealing with an older guy. And, you know, it just really changed me. And then another occasion, but my mom ended up moving me to Arkansas because I had an auntie there. And, you know, to get me away, because after that situation happened and the other situation, in which my brother was still alive after both, thank God, I had really started getting in the streets because I had to find protection from my family. And now my big brother was gone, I was the next in line. So I really started trying to figure out, you know, how to deal with the surrounding areas and people around. So I really had got tough. So my mom noticed it and she thought I was going the wrong direction, but she moved me to Arkansas. And the funny thing is, I went up there and in the areas of Chicago I lived, we didn't have different colors in our area, you know. It was just, I had never met anyone of any other nationalities. And by the time I went there, it was just a whole different situation. And I was so curious and I was excited because now I can, you know, just be free to be me. And I had opened my heart and my soul to just everything. And the funny thing is, I met so many people of all different nationalities, and we had became a little clique at my school. And the funny thing is after, right after we all clicked together and we had just went out camping, and we even did something funny called pushover cows. So I was like, pushover a cow, this is fun, okay. But then right after that, the Rodney King thing happened. And it was weird because it was a town called Cabot, Arkansas, right next to Jacksonville, Arkansas, where I was living at. And it just turned, our junior middle school or whatever turned straight chaos. And it was blacks against whites, and they were coming with cowboy boots on with the spurs on the back. And they were coming with Timberland boots with 2x4s, and this is what they doing at lunchtime. But me and my crew, we was all different colors. It was about 15 of us, and we would all stand for each other. And then I called my mom, and she had heard about it because we had made the news, because we were standing against everybody that was standing on one space or the other. And she was like, I sent you down there to keep you out of trouble, and you up there in the same stuff. Come on back home. So she brought me back home. But, you know, as life went on, especially that's one situation. And since being here, when I moved to Rochester, it was a hard road because, like I say, I was the first black barber there. And I think I was only 23 years old back then. And, you know, they wasn't used to it. And then number two, just by me being from Chicago, Chicago just has a bad name. And everybody is categorized by that, you know, from that situation, especially growing up there. See, I call myself a Minnesota Bull. I'm a Chicago Viking. Hard road, and you know, my best friend was killed there. I came to Rochester. I had just came from Europe from playing basketball. Actually, after I got my barber's license, I end up. They were trying to keep me out of trouble. I was like known. I was a basketball playground legend, and I used to go up against Kevin Garnett's and all the NBA players, and they would call me from the streets, and they wanted me to play up against these guys, and I was just a neighborhood street baller. But one of these times, they just said, man, look, we're gonna get your GD, and you're gonna go, we're gonna send you. And I had moved out the house when I was 16, and when they did that, they sent me straight overseas. So by the time I was 18, I was in Europe and my mom didn't know because I had already moved out the house. And I called her, I said, "Mom, you wouldn't believe where I'm at." She said, Where are you at, boy? Because I don't hear from you no more. I said, "Mom, I'm in Europe. I'm in Spain." She said, "Stop playing with me. Where are you?" But I went there for a year, and then I came back to Minnesota. I came to Minnesota because they had a semi-pro team called the Rochester Skeeters in Rochester. So I went there, and they played. They didn't pay much. But me being from Chicago and all the different trades and stuff I had learned, I just took the things and I said to myself, "Hey, I can just put the things I seen people create and make money off of here and try to make the best of it." So I was playing for the semi-pro team, and I was also running a nightclub. After hours, I would rent a space like this and put up, make all different things out of it just to make money, and I was doing pretty good. But like I was saying, not my own people I was fighting against. You know, I was fighting them, and I was just trying to make things for them to have a good time and be safe. And one particular time, my best friend, I had, he was here, and I had just moved my brother up here. And we had a wonderful time. It wasn't no fights or anything. And my best friend went to an after party and was stabbed. And instead of them calling the police, they called us. And my little brother went over there, being from Chicago. And my little brother was a little tougher than me. They said he was stabbed and kidnapped. And my brother went to chase the car and playing cowboy, kept and shooting at the car or whatever. And my brother was incarcerated. So now I've not only lost my best friend, but I had lost my little brother. And it's not like, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of people in my family that was wealthy. So everybody kind of reversed it on me and blamed me for the situation. And that's how I became a felon. I ended up selling drugs to try to get my brother a lawyer. And at the same time, I'm trying out for NBA teams. And it was just a hard road, and you know, that's when everything started breaking down. So I had got into drinking, and in the process, I'm getting DUIs, and I had never been to prison before. And you know, I went from all of this. By the time I got my brother his lawyer, and I put my money in the bank, and I actually had made the Timberwolves team while I'm going through all this, and I made the Atlanta Hawks team, but it was too far for me because I wanted to be close to get my little brother. So I moved camp on the way back here. Kevin Garnett helped me to get a tryouts with the Timberwolves, and I made the Timberwolves. And as soon as I did that, it was time for me to go to prison. So I had never been to prison before in my life. I mean, I hadn't even did a year, maybe for a traffic ticket. They put me in and out. And I went from that, and you know, back then Rochester was on the verge of just setting examples of people. And I went from no points, I had never been to jail, to looking at 86 months. So they incarcerated me for 86 months, and I don't know, I just made the best of it. And in the process of it, I was also, you know, I didn't know what to do no more, you know, so I would go out, and you know, I already had a light on me, so the police was stopping me all the time. And I don't know, I kind of went bottom. But in the process of it, I went to prison, and I made the best of it. I got more trades. I got interested into fiber optics and all of that stuff. I was just learning while everybody else was playing cards and everything else. I was reading and trying to do everything to kind of better myself. I was trying to create a better me. And yeah, I can go on forever. See, I told you guys this. But the process of it is I just thank y'all for really caring and really even having I've never heard of a church like this before. And I've been telling people of the story. They was like, what is this? And now there's so many people that's interested, even major people that's from all different areas that was just interested into what the story, and now I can describe it more with my little pamphlet I got from you guys today. So now it looks like I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, and I just thank you guys for having me in. You know, I'm working hard at, I'm still trying to change my life. You know, I'll be 50 this year, and in the process of being 50, I'm still learning. You know, you never grow up. You know, you always steady growing. I don't care if I be 70, I still say I'm still growing up. Now I'm learning from my kids and stuff like that. So, but thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Enjoy.
Oh man, it's being here has been amazing. I've been getting the most amazing support as far as just people wanting to be in the shop. You know, I've even had like the mayor.
What about some of the dreams?
I've went through a lot of people, so I can't specifically say, because what happens in the barbershop stays in the barbershop.
Fair enough.
They seem to, like, even, well, they like to put people in one area, I mean, in certain areas, and they bottle them all up in certain areas and hope that they can just adapt together instead of, you know, spreading everybody out to be together. Just like that East End Rec, like when I first came here 3 years ago, they were going through where the police was, and they were gonna make it a police and fire station. And I ended up putting together about 100 book bags, and I put all the supplies in them for different grades. And food, and I cut hair for free, and we had a petition to kind of write for them to help them to stop from closing that down to give these kids. But now, I mean, like with the East End Rec, they're not trying to make it no better. And it's like more for underprivileged kids. And the most important thing for that place is it can build the community, so it'll change a lot of things in Winona. And they need to stop making it for underprivileged kids and try to mix people of wealth with them underprivileged kids in the same place. And that's what I do with my barbershop, and what I'm trying to do with the restaurant is try to put everybody in one place. And I think that's the most important thing. It is very separated.
You talked about experiencing racism within your own community. Can you give us an example or two of what racism between blacks looks like?
Wow, that's a good one. Well, like I was the first black barber in Rochester. And I'm just gonna put it in, start there. And it was, instead of support, okay, I wouldn't even put it in one direction. Instead of supporting each other, it's more like a competition. And it's never where one person, like even if you're helping another person, they're more like trying to get over on you to get, instead of just us saying it's no I in team. And it's always like hatred in it. And no matter how hard you try, like myself being a cancer, I'm just so humble in trying to help other people, but I'm not gonna hold your hand and, you know, say, look, you, no, do it this way and do it that way. No, I just wanna, I got this for you. Okay, that's yours. I'm steady going, you know, and it's just so separated in hatred as far as, you know, and a lot of back talking behind your back and stuff. Same thing you go through with racism, because a lot of them are not strong. Racism is nothing but hatred. So I just feel like it's just me more noticing it in my own people than it is. Like, I don't get supported more by my own people here in Winona as I do by with diversity. Everybody comes to my shop. So they have to join, and now they're starting to. And I've been here 3 years, so.
Where did that strength come from?
Prison. No, I for real, like, prison helped me out so much, because even when I was like you know, trying out for these NBA teams and all of this stuff, and I had all this money and everything. I had so many people around me, and I was willing to do anything for them, you know what I mean? And it took for me to go to prison and kind of be on my own and, you know, see life. Being in prison was like being dead but alive. You could see everybody moving on, and you're just stuck there. And, you know, all of that and the frustration and the hurt and pain that you go through, especially with me never going to prison before, it really did a lot for me as far as strengthening me and having that you have to keep moving even though you're in a situation. And that's what did it for me. Now, I had money saved, and when COVID hit, I had to say, well, what I know is gonna make money now, and I chose the barbershop. So now I've been doing like more Sundays and breakfasts and stuff like that, more for the seniors, the senior living upstairs in the Kensington. And it's been going good. I sell out every time, and everybody's waiting on it, like everybody's been hearing about it. I'm like, how did you hear about it? But yeah, and now I have, so it's gonna be more like a pop-up kitchen. So I have Honduras people, I have Mexican people, I have Italian people, I have all different colors. And that's another thing, see, I'm more like you guys' church. I feel like soul food was given it's a black African-American thing for food. But me, soul food is anybody that cooks with the right, they cook with the right seasonings. You know, that's soul food. So that's why I pick people from all different types and try to make it a pop-up kitchen so that everybody, because that's not my dream. I just love food.
All right, finally.
Tell us about the usefulness of laughter in your journey. How laughter has lubricated your life.
Well, I mean, that's everybody's life. I mean, if you got to smile through it all, or you know, if you dwell on pain and hurts and the things that you're going through, it only brings you down more. But if you smile and you try to find joy in yourself, then it will make you. It'll make you be able to go along with the things that's supposed to be in life. I mean, keeps your joy up and keeps your spirit up.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.